Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Lisa Hollander.
And Barney Leventino.
And today we're interviewing Howie Rose. Howie has been the play-by-play announcer for the Mets since 1995, and he lived in the area. Our first question...
I don't anymore, but I did.
Yeah, I figured. There was a rumor. We wanted to, you know, verify that.
It's a fact.
So, when did you move to the area originally?
1999. We were living, when you say the area, I mean specifically within Syosset Woodbury.
Yes.
We were living in Jericho for about 11 years, and then we moved to an area called the Kessels in Woodbury, not too far at all, really right around the corner from Syosset High School.
Yes,
in 1999.
Yeah, that's a beautiful area. And when did you leave us?
We moved in 2015.
Okay. We were talking about doing this interview a couple of months ago, and things really turned around. I looked at the Mets record 3 months ago. They were, I think, 4 or 5 games under 500. They kind of really turned it on after the All-Star break. How do you approach your broadcasts differently when a team is in a funk and somebody's calling for the manager's head on a spike versus now when they're kind of in a potential playoff situation?
Well, the beauty of any sport really is that each game is its own entity. So I don't approach the game itself any differently. I think the action within the game, and certainly at this time of the year when the significance of every game is great, I think your inflection, your ability to inject drama into the broadcast relates the significance of the moment, but in terms of the approach to the game, I don't think it's generally any different.
So I have a question. How special was it to work with your daughter on that that Father's Day thing? I loved it. I watched it several times. I just thought it was amazing when you were in the Mets Hall of Fame.
Yeah, thank you. We've done a few. My daughter, Alyssa, does some work for the Mets in their social media department. So I would say we've done a handful of things together apart from the stuff that she does. And we get such great feedback to that because I think people genuinely like seeing parents and siblings sort of cohabitating in the workplace. And it's not constant in that Alyssa's not there every day. But it is a special treat for me to be able to work with her in that kind of a setting.
Just so you know where we're coming from, Lisa is dyed-in-the-wool Mets fan. I kind of lean the other way around here. I inherited the Yankees from my
father.
There
are pills for that now, you know.
And it's a lot of fun talking to you. We you've been broadcasting baseball games since, I guess, like 95. And... the game has, people say it's changed, evolved. In your view, what are the most significant changes you've seen in the way Major League Baseball is played?
The pace of the game, for one, they're just interminable too often now. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge for any broadcaster. We all talk about it when we see each other at games. And it is the biggest challenge, I think, that we have. Trying to keep the game fresh when it stalls to a virtual crawl. And a lot of that is the function of how pitching is utilized today, much differently than it was certainly when I was a kid and even when I started broadcasting baseball. The over-reliance on bullpens, the ability of starting pitchers to basically max out, or not the ability really, but just the fact now that starting pitchers max out in 5-plus innings has really taken, to me, a lot of the air out of the game. And I don't know how they change it, because it might be one of those situations where they're not going to be able to put the toothpaste back into the tube. And that's really too bad, because the game used to have a flow a lot more so than it does now. And that troubles me. It worries me. And I'm far from the only one to feel that way.
You almost get the sense a lot of times that that managers are managing these games without really watching what's going on the field. They're looking in their book and it's saying, well, it's the seventh inning. I got to yank this guy and put him in. He can pitch to this batter on Tuesdays when we're in this city, as long as the other team doesn't wear red. Otherwise, we got to put somebody else in. And it's like they're not really watching as far as, I mean, again, I'm looking from the outside, but it's almost as if they're ignoring what's going on in the game and just trying to force it into the formula that they've set up.
I don't think that's all that far from the truth. You know, there are times that it feels as though the baseball people have given way to the cast of the Big Bang Theory in terms of decision making. And I'm not so sure, despite the intricacies of that and how they can justify it, that that's a good thing. Because, again, what it's done is slow the game down to a crawl. It's less imaginative. You know, any sport really represents the only reality, if you're going to talk about the game on television, reality television that exists, because it's not scripted. And I think what's happened is they've tried to script baseball. The beauty of baseball and the beauty of any sport, despite however much preparation you put into it, is that it's freelanced. And there's inherent beauty in that. And I think some of that is being sucked out of baseball right now, and it worries me.
I think that's one of the reasons why I like Pete Alonso so much, because I just feel like he's got such personality. And I don't know, it's different than anything I've seen, at least, you know, recently. It just feels like he's just got like something special besides the fact that, you know, all the home runs and everything.
Yeah, there's a purity to him because there's nothing contrived. He's a kid that you can tell. I've never met his parents. I used to say this about David Wright, and I did meet his parents, that it was evident how well David was raised. You know, yes. David comes from a law enforcement background. That's what his dad did. And you can tell that, I don't know, David would occasionally talk about it being a strict upbringing, but not in an overly detrimental way, you know, to where it would lead somebody to go in the opposite direction. Quite the opposite as it involves David. I don't know much about Pete Alonso's parents, but the way he takes the initiative that he does in a number of different ways, and I think we saw it most recently with the way he just stepped out front and got those shoes, you know, the baseball shoes for the guys to commemorate the first responders from 9/11. That's a big part of who Pete is. And when he won the Home Run Derby, in fact, before he even got involved in the Home Run Derby, he said that if he won it, that he was going to donate a percentage of the winnings to the military, to veterans, and to police. And that's just who he is. He's a great kid.
Yeah, it's really refreshing to see guys that seem to be down to earth. They've got their head screwed on right. You mentioned the spikes and the 9/11 first responder. And the issue with the first responder hats. And I have to tell you, I heard your take on it. And before I get into the substance of it, I was amazed at how you, during the course of it, didn't miss a beat on the play-by-play. You went into the play-by-play, and then we just right back without missing a beat on your thoughts about the first responders issue.
Thank you. I mean, we're trained to do that.
Yeah,
so.
It's
probably seems a little more impressive than it really is.
Well, we're amateurs at what we're doing here, and it's nice to listen to a professional. But the substance of what you were talking about in terms of MLB really totally missing the point here in New York about that issue. It just is mind-boggling that they don't get it.
Well, it is, and you know, we had Joe Torre on with us a couple of days afterwards in game to talk about it, and I think Joe was limited in what he could say because even though he did take some of the responsibility for the decision, I think he was, you know, more trying to stay in line with what Major League Baseball's platform is, such as it is. I'll never understand it. I think it's hypocritical based on some of the ridiculous uniforms that they foist on us during the year. You know, I kind of made that argument last week, and I think that there's nothing going to be resolved on that until we close in on next September 11th. And, you know, hopefully we can keep enough heat on so that maybe they can relent. What I would love to see, frankly, is the Mets and the Yankees, if they're so inclined, say, you know what, we're doing this, and whatever the fine is, we'll deal with it, because the backlash from the fine would be so great that in Major League Baseball might think they'd won something, but it would be a Pyrrhic victory.
Exactly. I was just about to say, what would happen if they just went out and did it? I mean, what's the worst they could do?
So. I don't know, but, you know, the way they chase every nickel, I could only imagine how big the fine would be. If you started a GoFundMe, it might actually cover some of it.
Excuse me.
Also, I'm a huge Islanders fan, and I was just wondering, did you ever deal with any of my hostile fellow fans after the switch from the Rangers to the Islanders?
No, not really. I mean, look, it was a little uncomfortable for a couple of years, and, I always like to think that it wasn't my problem, because I was going to work very happily, and if people had a problem with it, well, time tends to manage that, and
yes.
I think that's really what happened. I don't know if I could have left the Rangers had they not won the Cup. You know, that's how strong my emotional bond was to them, because I, as a kid, fell in love with hockey and the Rangers before there ever were any Islanders. But what most fans didn't know about what made the move to the Islanders special for me is that I probably would never have become a Rangers announcer if not for the Islanders and their very existence, because when the Islanders came into being in the 1972-73 season, I was a freshman at Queens College, and I worked at the college radio station, and the Islanders were smart enough to realize that, you know, they needed to scour every area to find support and generate interest, and so they allowed me as a member of the collegiate media to cover their games, and what I would do was bring my tape recorder to the game, sit in the press box with a friend of mine who was a writer, and do play-by-play just as though we were on the air. We didn't, you know, fool around or you know, kind of go half-heartedly at it. We went full bore. And that included going downstairs after the game and doing interviews with the coach and Al Arbor and the players. And the training I got just from that exposure was immeasurable. And so I got to know some of those players in a way that at my age, I was 19 when I started doing that, you know, I never would have had the opportunity to develop. And that went a long way towards maturing me in this business. And so when I got the Islander job, I thought that there was a very strong connection there. And I knew I could never really relay that to the fans. And I just said, look, you just, just work on your own and sink or swim.
Right.
As a local broadcaster, I know I talk to a lot of guys who are fans, and they really want their broadcasters to be homers. And how do you overcome the pressure to essentially lose your credibility? I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm accustomed to not the greatest radio coverage of my team, without disparaging anybody in particular, but it gets frustrating at times. And fans sometimes expect a little more from the broadcasters than really just the commentary and the play-by-play.
Well, you certainly have to treat the fans like adults. And I think that what happens is, as you get involved in this business, you know, your fandom just sort of organically takes a back seat to the responsibility that you have to your listeners or your viewers. And that, more than anything, is to be honest, fair, but honest. And look, I can't ever disguise the fact that I grew up a huge Mets fan, or for that matter, a huge Rangers fan. But you have to temper that with what you see in front of you, so that the people that you're being listened to by trust what it is you say.
Yes.
You know, if I make, say if I were doing a hockey game, I'm doing an Islander, well, let's even say a Ranger game, because that was on radio and the fans couldn't see it. You know, if I said there was a lousy call against the Rangers, and every single time there was a penalty called against the Rangers, I questioned the officiating, well, I wouldn't have any credibility. And so you learn very quickly that you'd better be accurate, and you'd better be fair, and you'd better be honest. And the passion comes naturally. So, you know, the whole business of what a homer is really up to the imagination of whoever's doing the evaluating. I can look at the term homer as a positive thing if it means that you are, in fact, fair and accurate, but you're excited to see the team you work for win. If that's the case, guilty as charged.
Fair enough. you talked about way back when Queens College, and then I think we'll go back also a blast from the past. It's a long way from Sports Phone. That was the first time I ever heard your voice. How'd you end up on Sports Phone?
kind of a lucky break. I had known Marv Albert by the time I was, well, really, I started his fan club when I was 13 years old, and he realized that I was serious about being a broadcaster. So when they were putting Sports Phone together, he recommended me to someone who was putting it together and called me for an interview. And that was that, really.
We probably have a lot of our audience who were after that time. They don't even know what Sports Phone was. It was kind of like before the internet, this was Sports Google, I guess, is really the way I would describe it. But that was always a lot of fun. We always used to call it the Sports Phone oftentimes.
Yeah, it was great training, you know, for a broadcaster, because you had to be wrapped in something like 58 and a half seconds. And so you learn to be succinct and accurate and concise. And when you had a little more time, when there weren't games going on, you could sink your teeth into an issue and do some commentary. And it was a great training ground, and I'm very glad that I had that opportunity.
You also were one of the first voices on WFAN when they went all sports.
Right.
And when FAN switched over to sports, I mean, did you expect that its run would be as long as it has, and then that it would kind of be the start of a whole explosion in sports radio?
Well, I'll answer it this way. For about the first year, every day I walked into the station, I kept looking over my shoulder to see if that was the day they were going to padlock the door, because they made a lot of mistakes at the beginning, honest mistakes, but misguided, and that the person who put it together as the first station manager, a lovely man by the name of John Channon, who people have told me was actually the prototype for the Lou Grant character, which may or not be true. If it's true, it makes sense based on John, but most people didn't know who he was, so it wouldn't do me any good to, you know, try and refute that. I assume it was true because people said it was true, so I'll leave it at that. But anyway, he had come from a long career in network radio. And when he was doing the hiring, a lot of his hires reflected his background, meaning he brought people in from a lot of different areas in the country with no real feel for or understanding of New York. And that worried me. And I would tell them that, too. I mean, I didn't think I did it in a way that I was jeopardizing my own future there. But, you know, I just tried to very gently explain to them that we needed to be more local, because nobody, first of all, especially back then in New York in 1987, nobody cared about college football, and for the most part, you know, they still don't. I know a lot of games are on and available now in ways they weren't back then, but, you know, we've never been a college football town, a little more so a college basketball town, but, you know, this is New York. It's play the hits. We've got 9 pro teams if you count the Jersey teams.
Yes.
So, you know, we needed to be centered on that, and it was only when they started to do that that the station started to gain some traction.
In some ways, I wonder if the explosion in sports talk radio kind of led down the whole road to the whole fantasy concept, the fantasy football and baseball leagues. And what's your take on all of that? You like fantasy? Do you find?
I don't know that I'd make the connection, because I know that what they used to call rotisserie baseball, now fantasy baseball, was in existence before FAN was.
Okay.
And, you know, I know Jody McDonald used to do a show in the very early days of FAN about rotisserie or fantasy baseball. And, you know, I guess he had his sort of cult following as far as that particular segment went. But I know when I was doing a talk show, I wouldn't ever give anybody the you know, the airtime to talk about their fantasy team, because other than them, nobody cared about it. So if anybody wants to do those things, that's great, but it's not a topic for conversation on talk radio.
I know a couple of younger guys way younger than me. I'm close to your age, who are big fantasy guys. And I watch the way they watch the games, and it almost becomes that the actual game is secondary to what their fantasy guys are doing.
It's more about the individuals.
Yeah, it changes their whole approach to watching the game. And I'm like, I just want to see who's going to win.
I have no interest in it. I never have, and it doesn't make any impact on me whatsoever when I'm watching a game.
Okay. Any event that you would love to have an opportunity to broadcast?
Yeah, the fifth game of the 1969 World Series. That would have been fun.
Yes.
You know, that's probably at the top of my list. I don't really think about those events that happened, you know, before I was born. But, you know, sure, there would have been a whole lot of them. I mean, any big moment in sports would be great, you know, to be behind the mic for. The U.S. win over the Russians in 1980 in hockey at Lake Placid. Boy, that must have been some great game to do. You know, any exciting or epochal moment in sports for a broadcaster is one that you'd like to have had the opportunity to work. So I don't know, other than the one I just told you, that there's any other that comes to mind.
And up to this point in your career, your defining call would be, what do you think?
He's going to have to say it.
Oh, I think most people who talk to me about my career inevitably get to Matteau.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Oh, it's hard for me to dispute that. And, yes, you know, they say, thank you for that. And I say, well, it was my pleasure, believe me, because that was quite a night. And I don't know that that would have taken on the significance and had the legs that it does now, 25 years later, had the Rangers not gone on to win the Cup. So,
right,
you know, for that call to have had whatever impact it has, I think the mandate was to win the Stanley Cup, which they did, and my call became gravy.
It's right up there with the Giants win the pennant.
Yeah.
And again, I was a diehard Islanders fan at the time, and it was killing me to see the Rangers moving on, but it was good anyway. It was good for New York.
Wait, you say that like you're not anymore.
I still am, but I was then too. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. And if you're ever in the area, pop by and say hello.
Yes.
I will. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to close this one out. Do you want to say it?
You probably want me to say, put it in the book.
There you go. Right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Usually you have to pay extra for that.
Okay. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.
Put it in the box.